broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Yabul, I said.
What do you consider yourself, Ted? Are you...
Yeah.
Are you bi? Are you...
If I only would have just hit the 9 instead of the 7.
It's overwhelming. I'm exhausted. I did this for them.
There is something that I got to tell you now.
This will leave a foul taste in your mouth.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On this show, truth is our bitch, and we get at it in some pretty funny ways. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. They dare not. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. Good evening, good morning, and welcome to the program. We have coming up tonight, in just a couple of seconds, Bobby Dooley will talk with us about this new book, The Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. This is a book written by Amy Chua, an author who has who has embraced what she calls the traditional Chinese mother's way of raising children, and it is completely the opposite, really, of what we consider to be healthy in America. You call your kid fatty, you call your kid garbage. You leave them out in 20-degree weather if they don't practice their piano. You don't let them eat if they haven't done their homework. This is in the book, The Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. What are the odds that an American mother, like Ms. Dooley and others, would embrace this philosophy? Well, we'll find out in just a minute. And then later on in the program, we will talk the Super Bowl, $10 billion the American people will be spending on the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks, and we'll have Charlie LaFountain, who is a blogger for the East Side Observer. He's been on MSNBC and as well as a blog for the Huffington Post. That's coming up next hour. Our number is 877-876-7445. The L.A. Affiliate here, our great L.A. affiliate, is in our affiliate spotlight tonight, KTLK 1150 AM, as well as KFI AM 640 on Saturday nights. And our great affiliate in State College, Pennsylvania, home of Penn State, WBLF 970 AM. www.philhendryshow.com is our website. And right there, right now, you can watch live streaming video of our show. We've got the video cam on, brother. And in, I think, tomorrow or the next day, we will begin receiving some of our equipment as we begin our video transition. You can also listen to hours of archived material there. You get a backstage pass and just go exploring at philhendryshow.com. There's more stuff there than any other radio show has ever offered and I think ever will offer. All right. Author and mother argues that shaming children is superior parenting. It's an act of love to call a child fatty. It's an act of love to call a child garbage. Cruel and abusive or simply tough love? That has been the continuing controversy surrounding author Amy Chua, and I'm very grateful that we're dealing with this tonight with Bobby Dooley. Her husband, Steve Dooley, is also with her, as both members of the parent-teacher organization there at Western Estates. Good evening, Bobby.
Good evening, Phil.
Let me read here to the audience, and much of this you're familiar with. Her self-proclaimed mantra, talking about Amy Chua, laid out in her best-selling book, Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother, includes telling her daughters no play dates, no sleepovers, no school plays, no whining about no school plays. Now, there's a lot more here, Bobby, but tell me what you think.
Well, you know what we think. We have an informal group, Friends of Amy, and we also have another informal group called... Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother, Angels, sort of an auxiliary support group. We're excited, and as friends of Amy, we really, really support what she's doing, and we want to be as much a part of that as we possibly can. The idea came to me, I think, Phil, because there's a lot of women who need help with their parenting.
Were you a... you're the mother of three boys.
Yes.
Well, how did your boys come out?
Well, you know, of course, my sons have turned out wonderfully, but they had a lot of advantages. A lot of it had to do with how I raised them, the attitude of their father. I think that they were, you know, they were lucky. I don't want to claim any great aptitude as a mother, but I think that they were lucky in that they had a couple of parents who were enlightened. We are European ancestry. I breastfed the boys. Just basic things here. So, friends of Amy, and this is Amy Chua, we support her. We want other women to support her. We want women to at least read the book. And that's why we've been at our boys' schools, other schools around the country, and getting women to at least take a look at the book.
Why did you and why did other women decide that this idea, and I'm going to read some more, Chinese parents believe that they know what is best for their children and therefore override all of their children's own desires and preferences. Amy Chua even says that calling one's daughter garbage if they get bad grades or fatty if they're fat is a good thing because bad grades are garbage and skinny is superior.
Absolutely.
Do you want to comment on that? Given the fact that children, young girls, suffer from anorexia?
Well, I think that that is going overboard, mentioning anorexia. We know that we want our daughters to look as presentable as they can, just as we want our boys to look as presentable as they can. The fact that we have been arguing against this has allowed the Chinese and others in the Asian Pacific Rim area to raise children that are far more competitive. The Asian children, Phil, are now leading Western children in math and science. There are more of them in the master's programs. And yes, there are more of them that are probably going to be posing as models or as gymnasts or as athletes, while our children are getting bigger and less healthy.
Now, here's a quote here. She says, it's an act of love. Many Chinese secretly believe that they care more about their children and are willing to sacrifice much more for them than Westerners who seem perfectly content to let their children turn out badly. Amy Chua.
It's very radical thinking. And when I read the book, I wanted to make sure that I was able to contact her and tell her that we wanted to associate ourselves with her, and that I was going to get as many of my friends as I could to
associate yourselves in what way?
To get any kind of a support group going for this, because it sounds like it is really going to be the next big thing.
Are you, if I could ask you, Ms. Dooley, your attraction to this philosophy, the Tiger Mother philosophy, is based on what? You feel it's good for the kids? You feel it's the next big thing?
Well, I think it's both. I think it is good for the kids, and it is the next big thing. And I'm the president of our homeowners association, so I have to represent myself and our community the best way I can. This book is a bestseller. The book is radically different. It encourages mothers to keep their daughters as slender as possible. It encourages parents to do things differently. So when we go out and we talk to parents, mostly mothers, and we say, have you read the battle hymn of the Tiger Mother? And they say no, then we will say, we'd like an answer why. And it does put us in conflict with it.
Now, what are you doing?
When we go to the schools, we'll say to people, have you read the battle hymn of the Tiger Mother? If they say no, I will say why. And a lot of times women will say, well, I don't have any time. I'll say, if you say no, we deserve a good answer. Why are you not reading this revolutionary book, Phil? The country needs something, obviously, when it comes to our kids.
So you're stopping women and you're saying, have you read the book?
Yes.
And if they say no, you will demand an answer. Why?
We think the country is in such a bad shape that we have to demand an answer why. Why are you not? Why are you not?
Yeah, I was here the other day. She was insistent on that.
I'm sorry, the other day what?
Well, the other day we had a couple of mothers walk by and I said, excuse me. And they kept walking and I said, excuse me. And then they turned around and I said, I would like an answer.
And you don't find yourself getting, you know, what you're doing is you're telling people how to raise their kids and, you know.
Well, I think we need more of it in this country, Phil. And the book is called Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. And it tells American parents something that they've needed to hear for a long time. The Chinese are raising their kids better.
All right, our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. Ms. Chua said to ABC, I didn't expect this level of intensity. The book, of course, it's not a how-to guide. It's really my own journey and transformation. The Wall Street Journal recently wrote on its China real-time report that although Ms. Chua has since pointed out she offers a much more nuanced take on parenting in the book, the debate around expert excerpts continues to rage. From the fierce backlash, Chua has said she received death threats.
Absolutely.
It says here that people are saying terrible things about my kids, wishing bad things on my family. I guess it's just so personal.
Absolutely, Phil. What Amy Chua is doing is she's trying to alert all of us that we've got kids that are overweight. We have children that are not really... if we really had our eyes open, we wouldn't want these kids representing us. I don't really, to be honest with you, I think it's just an exciting thing to be a part of. I don't grasp the whole philosophy 100%. You know.
So much of your attraction to this is just that it is the next big thing.
It is definitely the next big thing.
And we wanted to get on board.
And we wanted to, yes, we wanted to feel that we were on board, that we were out front. I don't want any other American mother saying, oh, I've already read that. I know what that's about. Let me talk about it. I want women coming to me.
And all right, so you feel that you're the one to talk to, other than Ms. Chua herself, about this. So let me ask you a question. When you call a child garbage, when you call a kid fatty, when you sit a kid out in the 20-degree weather or you and say that you got to stay there until you do your piano lessons or you don't get any food tonight, in light of anorexia, in light of the depression the children have suffered and the suicides that have resulted from it, do you think that this is a country, America, whose children can handle that kind of treatment?
I think we have to toughen our kids up. There's no question about it. My boys can handle it. I'm lucky. I've got three tough boys. They were raised by myself and my husband, and I knock wood. We were great parents.
Did you talk to your boys like this?
We didn't have to. We didn't have to. It was different for us, and it's not really fair. Most other kids need this. We did not have to talk to our kids this way. But the American children that are out there right now, I think, and Ms. Chua has convinced myself and my husband, they're in big trouble because they are overweight, they are lazy, many of them are stupid, criminal, drug using. The list goes on and on, Phil, of what's wrong with American children, and it really is what's wrong with the American parent.
877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Bobby and Steve Dooley about the new book. It's out by Amy Chua called The Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. This is a woman who talks about her upbringing at the hands of an Asian mother, a Chinese mother. It was tough, tough, tough love, and it was some hard-ass stuff like you're fat, you're not going to get any food, you're not going to go inside where it's warm, you're going to, basically, like you're in some kind of a devil's island or a boot camp, and Ms. Dooley, along with her husband and other mothers, feel that the time is now for American kids to be treated that way, including her confronting mothers at their kids' school and asking, are you going to read the book? When she gets an answer no, she insists on knowing why. 877-876-PHIL. So maybe it's the parents are getting some of this tough stuff as well as the kids. 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Hendry Show back in a moment with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-7445. On the line with me is Bobby and Steve Dooley. We have Bobby Dooley. We're talking about the book Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. This is a book that was written by Amy Chua that advises American kids are being raised soft. American kids are being raised in a manner that just is not going to produce a superior kid, especially now in comparison to the way Asians raise their kids. Ms. Chua said that as a child, she was sat out in the snow when it was 20 degrees. If she didn't play the piano, she was called fat. She was called garbage. One of the more controversial excerpts from the book was when Chua wrote how she rejected a Mother's Day card that Sophia, one of her daughters, had given her when she was a kid. Sophia, who's now 18, defended her mother's reaction in a recent New York Post article, saying, "Let's face it, the card was feeble, and I was busted. If I'd actually tried my best at something, you'd never throw it back in my face." What do you think of that, Bobby?
She did the right thing. That child, it's Mother's Day. You're honoring the woman that brought you into the world. And you give her, in exchange for that, a Mother's Day card that is not, there's no effort put into it. There's no love put into it. There's no nothing really put into it. It's just done because it's expected. And to say to that child, "I don't take this card. I'm not going to have you insult me. I'm your mother." See, they do that in China.
And over in China, Mr. Henry, if you're aware,
No, I'm aware of Confucian philosophy and, you know.
Lao Tzu, Phil, is another Chinese philosopher. We didn't have anything like that in the United States. We don't have philosophers like Confucius, like Lao Tzu. We don't have an ancient philosophy like that that has come up over the centuries. And so what we have are children that will insult their parents by giving a mother a Mother's Day card that is so poorly done. It's an insult to the mother, it really is, and it doesn't bespeak love at all.
All right, question for you here. And our number 877-876-PHIL. We'll get to some phone calls in a minute here, but I want to ask Bobby about the this idea that other children are, in other words, your kids are fine. So you're really talking about other kids here.
Well, but we would anyway, even if my boys were not fine.
All right, and do you feel that you have the right to speak to another person's child?
Amy Chua, with this book, yes, she's given us permission to do that. If you read this book, you realize that you have permission to say to another person's child, and I would never, ever want to speak to someone else's child unless it was absolutely necessary. But we have Kirsten Gildebrand's daughter. We have the Lauren child. There are a number of girls and families in our neighborhood, the Matsons. Their daughters are overweight, and to put it that way is to put it very kindly. I've tried to work with these girls during our fashion shows. Every year, I will point it out to them, but I've been very, you know, I've never had any backup.
Yeah, a lot of times my wife will say that you're fat and I don't even care about it, anything like that.
Well, if your wife, have you been calling these girls fat?
I've been telling the girls, you are obese and you've got to lose the weight. But I never really had the moral authority until Amy's book came out. When I read Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom, I suddenly had permission to tell, even if it was another girl's, another mother's daughter, you look terrible. You look absolutely horrible in that dress. You've got to do something with your skin. You've got to do something with your skin. I never had the moral permission. And
well, you're saying that this book gives you the moral permission to say that to another girl. Would you want someone else, you know?
Well, Mr. Irving never had the moral permission.
Until Ms. Chua came out with the book, we really never, I couldn't say, but look at Amy Chua's book. Look at what the Chinese do.
All right, I understand. But would you countenance this treatment for your own sons?
It's not going to happen, Phil. I mean, I've talked to you before in your show about these things.
And yeah, I've said that's never going to happen.
It just isn't going to happen.
No, but if your sons in an alternate universe, we could just say, Ms. Dooley, if your boys were bad skin, overweight, lazy, whatever you want to say, would you countenance this treatment for your boys?
I can't answer that question.
Why not?
It's impossible to answer that question because I can't imagine, you know, what that would be like.
What about fathers? Why are you targeting mothers? What about the fathers?
We go after mothers because the fathers have made themselves so irrelevant when it comes to the raising of children. And even my own husband would admit to that, right, Steve?
In not many ways to say we're irrelevant now.
Men have become so irrelevant when it comes to the raising of children because of their own inability to raise children. They've never invested any time in it. Some of these men are, as you know, absolutely incapable. You don't trust your children with your own husband and their father. So you are forced to take over the raising of these kids by yourself. And so the father has become irrelevant. This is why Amy's book is so important, though.
The Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother is the name of this book. Bobby and Steve Dooley on the line talking with me about it. 877-876-7445 is the number. 877-876-7445 as we continue talking about how Chinese and Asian parents raise their kids better than Americans raise their kids. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, Charlie the Fountain on the Super Bowl.
Phil Hendry.
Phil Hendry Show with Bobby Dooley of the Western Estates Parent Teacher Organization. Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother is the name of this book by Amy Chua, a woman who advocates a Chinese mother's solution to substandard performance. It's to excoriate, to punish, and to shame the child. Calling them fat is good. Calling them garbage is good. Saying that they the little Mother's Day card that they made for them was insufficient, that's a good thing. Telling the child they didn't work hard enough on that, it's a good thing. Chua says, I'm sad. In the United States, others that are U.S., let's see, others said that U.S.-born Chua, whose Chinese ethnic parents emigrated from the Philippines, should not be representing Chinese parents. She said that's sad. The last third of this book, it's not Tiger, it's a crying little rabbit.
See, I love that. I think it's poetic.
And with us, by the way, Bobby, you adhere to this, and you have friends of Amy, and you guys have been out talking to parents on schoolyards, and we have a clip of you talking recently on a schoolyard to some parents. Let's play that.
Can I talk to you? Talk to you? Excuse me. Turn around. I want to ask you why you're not reading the book. Why are you not reading the book? Turn around and look at me.
All right,
look at me. Oops, it's that. Why are you not reading the book?
Okay, did you put your hands on that woman?
I grabbed her arm. And I'll tell you why I grabbed her arm. She was walking away and not even looking at me. That's something you don't do with me. I don't think you should do that with anybody, but it's particularly wrong to do with me. When I say excuse me, you turn and at least acknowledge that I exist, that you heard a noise, and it came from a human being, and you're going to look and you're going to acknowledge that that human is there.
So you reached and you grabbed. It sounded to me like you had almost a fight.
No, there was no fight. Believe me, that woman was not going to go there, but I did say to her, I insist on an answer. And
What did she tell you?
She said that she hadn't heard of the book, that she would get it. She apologized.
Well, okay, so she's apologizing to you. That's interesting. 877-876-PHIL. She's apologizing to you for what? For ignoring you?
For ignoring me, yeah.
All right, we're talking here with Bobby Dew. Let's get back to this philosophy that the fathers are irrelevant. I want to talk a little bit more about that. In this book, Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother, you're talking about a mother raising the children, not fathers having anything to do with it. How do the fathers take that?
Well, I don't think fathers would really weigh in with an opinion. I know that my own husband, Steve, has accepted the fact that I gave birth to these boys and that the primary care and raising of them is mine. I know a lot of houses do it differently, but Amy's book has pointed out to me that I've done it right. And I'm, you know, I knock wood that I did it right, and I knock wood that I raised my boys well. I did not have the benefit of this book, so I knock wood that I knew what I was doing, even though I didn't have the book. So I'm in a little bit of a different case. My husband is not going to get involved because he knows that's not how we do it. But we really shouldn't, to any great degree, Phil, trust fathers to be alone with the children, particularly girls. They're not very motivated to be good parents. Men are not necessarily...
Well, what does that mean, particularly with the girls? Are we going to assume that every man is a risk to a child?
No, but we do. I think we don't do our children a service. We're spending enough time calling them garbage and calling them fat and calling them ignorant and stupid. We don't need to have the fumblings of a father, particularly one with a criminal intent.
Tell about the people down the hill.
Well, we do. The Hildebrands who live down the street. It's a father with two daughters. I have been very curious what is the status of that home. So we marched right down there and knocked on the door. One of the daughters answered, and I questioned her for a good 20 minutes.
You know, you're not only are you walking up to people's kids and telling them how to live, you're now going down to a guy's house and you're saying to the guy's daughter, how are you being treated and is everything okay, and so on and so forth. I mean, how do these parents react?
Well, I'm the Homeowners Association president. So there's going to be a much bigger difference in the way people are going to react to me. I don't know how else to say that, but when I see a father living with his two daughters, I got to go down there and I have to, I've got to let them know I live on the street.
Yeah. No, you're not going to do that.
I can't hear what your husband's saying. All right. So, and then finally here, you claim to have responsibility for the kids in the neighborhood. So is that also something that's out of your battle hymn, or is that just your homeowners association? Are other mothers required to have responsibility for the kids in the neighborhood?
Other mothers, I think, when you see a girl whose skin is bad or who is overweight, a girl who is or a boy, they're acting out, they're misbehaving. Yes, then according to Amy, you do have to walk up to that child and tell them to shut up, sit down, take some kind of cleanser to their face, do whatever it takes to drop whatever weight they have, because it's obvious the parent's not doing the job.
And if the parent is there, are you going to do this in front of the parent?
Well, if the parent is there, that's what I say. Have you heard of Amy's book?
Oh, so you do that kind of... So you'll ask them right there if they've heard of the book. Well, I've definitely got to get a copy of this book. It's called The Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mother. You're not even the author.
No, I love being able to promote it because we are friends of Amy, and we do feel that she's got a very good book here. And I hope that the people listening will take my advice and as quickly as they possibly can, get their children into some kind of shape and some kind of a level of performance where they don't continue to intrude on my life or the lives of other parents that are doing it right. And I don't just mean the children, obviously. The parents themselves, when they allow these children out into the world to intrude. So it's intrusion by proxy.
And yeah, it's a parent one cousin.
It's an intrusion by proxy.
Intrusion by proxy, meaning the children. All right. Well, Ms. Dooley, the very best of luck to you and your husband. And I can only tell you that if you were to walk up to me and tell me that the kid that, you know, my kid was too fat, too ugly, or whatever.
I would never do that. I would say, have you read Amy Chu?
Yeah, and if you said, have you read Amy Chu, and I kept walking, and you said, excuse me, I would just keep right on walking.
But the distraction from my voice, you'd be hearing. And that would cause you to endanger yourself, either by walking into traffic or eventually by having some kind of a physical malady like a heart attack.
That may be wishful thinking on your part, ma'am, but I would not stop and turn and look. If I've got somewhere to go, I've got somewhere to go.
Well, then...
And if you came up to me and you grabbed my arm, then I guess I would have to turn and say, yes, may I help you?
Yes, and I'd ask you, had you read the book?
No, I have not read the book.
May I recommend that you read the book? Because it's very likely that you have children. That
okay, I can't be bothered. I got to get going.
That's rude.
That's just rude.
Well, it may be rude, but I will tell you that a lot of what's being talked about in this book sounds pretty rude. We're going to move on. We have with us coming up, we have Charlie the Fountain.
All right, is that the end of the interview?
It's the end of the interview, yes. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, I didn't take any phone call.
Yeah, we don't know what happened.
There were no phone calls for you that we wanted to put on the air. There were no phone calls for you that were of any use.
That's never happened to me.
But what about phone calls?
What about the phone calls?
There were no phone calls that we wanted to put on the air with you, so we're going to move on now, if you don't mind, and we're going to have another guest on next hour.
So am I being thrown off?
I'm telling you, thank you very much. World famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877.
I'm making that noise in protest.
Would you please put her on hold?
Great.
877-876-7445, the Phil Henry Show. We're going to be talking next hour. Would you have her not? Would you not do that, please?
I don't want to be thrown off of this program.
Ms. Dooley, all right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back on the show.
I won't be treated.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil, welcome back here, the world famous Phil Henry Show. We got Charlie the Fountain next hour. Is she still on there?
Yes, she's not going to hang up.
I ain't going to talk to this woman, do you understand? I'm done with her, and I don't want to talk to her anymore. I'm not going to talk to you anymore, ma'am. Do you understand that?
Well.
She dropped the F-bomb?
Yeah.
Get her out of here. Good for you. You got Amy Chua's book.
I told her, ma'am, that you want to talk.
She wants to talk more about that Amy Chua. I mean, nobody's going to, you know, who's going to call her kid a fat slob and have him sit out in the snow other than your mom, Robert?
Well, yeah, my mother was very special.
Right. All right, 877-876-PHIL.
It's not special.
We're joking. Do you understand? Ohio mom is jailed for lying about a kid's school residency. I don't know whether or not this is from Battle Hymn of a Tiger Mom. See, here's how it works. You know that there's certain school districts, and you have to live in a certain area in order to qualify to have your kid be in that school district. Now, here is a woman by the name of Kelly Williams Bowler. She's a single mother. She lived in an Akron public housing project. She was convicted of lying about her residency in order to send her two daughters to a highly ranked school. Her sentence, which inflamed emotions in the community, was 10 days in jail. 4 years ago, Williams Bowler, 40, sent her children, now 12 and 16, to the Copley Fairlawn School District that was outside her Akron district of residence. Her father lives in the Copley Fairlawn District, and she said she lived with him part-time because her home was burglarized and she wanted her children safe. But the district accused the aspiring teacher of lying about her address, falsifying records, and having her father file false court papers to circumvent the rules. The school asked her to repay $30,000 in tuition, saying her daughters were getting a quality education without paying taxes to contribute to the cost. She refused, and she was indicted. A jury convicted her January the 15th of two counts of tampering with records, and she was sentenced 3 days later. Now, she got 10 days in jail. And ordinarily, that's a pretty heavy crime when you're tampering with records. And I understand she was trying to send her kids to a really cool school, you know.
Yeah, but why you put her in jail for that?
I'm not talking about... You guys buy into the headline all the time. You never read the story. You read the headline and you buy into it, don't you?
That lady wanted to put her kid in a good school. You can't say that's bad.
I'm not saying it's bad, but you two idiots, you never want to read the story. You buy into the headline. AOL wants you to believe that the woman was put in jail because she wanted a good education for her kids. That's what you want to believe, isn't it?
That's exactly what happened to her.
No, that is not what happened to her. No, that is not. That's the end result. That is what came of her desire to put her children into a good school. But that's not what she got put in jail for. Now, let me tell you something. I have total sympathy for this woman. She went so far as to falsify court papers. Her father lied. She tampered with records. A lot of stuff that, you know, if the guy, I'm telling you, if it was a white-collar criminal of either race, white or black, some guy that owned a business, you name it. If it had nothing to do with children, if it had nothing to do with school, if it had to do with, say, a car lot, if it had something to do with a, who knows, you know, a real estate, we wouldn't blink, man, when a guy goes inside for 10 days.
No, man, that's wrong. That's just wrong. That lady wanted children. You know, I know about the project. You know I was raised in a project in Atlanta.
I know the projects you were raised in, and I'm sorry about that, okay? Tough. I'm white, you're black. That's the way it goes. No, nope, I'm kidding.
Shut up, man.
You tell me not to be racism.
I'm not racist. He knows I'm kidding. I'm sorry about that, Robert. I'm sorry about your upbringing in that project, but, you know, I'm a white man. You know, shut up. Don't throw crap at me.
You can't talk like that.
Oh, I'm screwing around. Give it a break. Look, I agree with you guys. Let's listen to this lady, because I went through this personally as a homeowner. You're not going to believe this, but I'll tell you. Well, you will believe it after I give you the specifics. Not all that unbelievable, but I sold my house not too long ago. We sold our house, and we sold it to a couple that had been told by the realtor that if they lived at this address, the address that I was selling my home, that their children would be eligible for one of the school districts. Okay? Now, I believe they also got corroboration on this from the school district, and that's where the school district screwed up. Because what happened was, when we went to finalize the sale, the school district came back and said, oh, no, that's... Now, what I was looking at, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't give a damn where their kids went to school. I could care less.
Yeah, well, you know, so you're not good about the Tiger Mom?
The what?
You don't believe in Tiger Mom.
I ain't talking about Tiger Mom right now, man. What's that got to do with it?
You don't care about another kid, another lady kid.
I don't give a crap. We're not talking Tiger Mom. All I wanted to do was sell a house. Do you understand? I got to get a house sold, man. I got a house. I'm selling a house. And thank God I sold this house in 2006 just before the bottom fell out of the real estate market. Because I'm telling you, Jack, it wasn't an easy thing to do. But we sold it. Now I'm looking at this thing going south because this school district and the realtor both said one thing and then it turns out to be something else. So guess who rode to the rescue?
You?
Me. I got on the horn with the school district and I said, I got to tell you. And I didn't even say lawyer. I didn't say lawyer. I didn't say it. I just said, wow, that's, you know, you did say it. And, you told the realtor, and it is a problem. You know, it is a problem. That's as far as I went.
You said you're going to sue him?
I didn't say I was going to sue anybody. What am I going to do? The parents might have. I don't know. But I just said, wow, we got a problem. Well, thank God, you know, that I think it was like 6 hours later, I got a phone call from the realtor. Everything's cool. And it's all been chilled out, and it turns out that maybe they can make some kind of a... I didn't want to know. All I knew was that the sale of the house went through.
You might have facilitated the crime.
Facilitated a crime?
What's that?
You know.
What are you talking about?
You might have, what's the word? Made a crime.
What crime? All I told them was, you guys said this, and they did say it. And I reminded them what they said. And there wasn't a whole lot of, what do they say, wiggle room? Yeah, I got your wiggle room, all right. Despite Kelly William Bolger's pleas, Judge Patricia Cosgrove sentences the bomb to 10 days in jail. So let's listen to this heartless bitch of a judge. I mean, let's listen to this judge now.
My girls need me. I've never, ever went a day without seeing them off. Never. My oldest daughter is 16. I need to be there for my kids. I need to be a support for them.
I felt that some punishment or deterrent was needed for other individuals who might think to defraud the various school systems.
Well, I can't disagree with the judge as much as I just hate this, but this is a heavy crime. And do you say she's a mother and she was trying to get her kids into a decent school? You know, it stinks, man. You know, it just stinks. Trying to get her kids into a, you know, get a decent education. I don't, you know, a public education in America We always let the crow about what it used to be. I know it's not that way anymore, but it used to be, well, no matter who you were, no matter what you were, no matter where you were from, no matter how ugly you were, like in Bud's case, you could get a decent education, like not in Bud's case. Williams Bowler sells ABC News. Do you hear what I was talking about? You? What are you doing?
Looking to see if the guy can get the right order.
Is that the pizza guy? Did he bring the...
Yeah. Garlic bread? Yeah.
All right. Williams Bowler... Get out of here. She tells ABC News that she only did this to help her kids and it shouldn't be treated. She shouldn't be treated like a murderer. Well, you're not being treated like a murderer. You're only getting 10 days. Murderers get the death penalty.
It's overwhelming. I'm exhausted. I did this for them, so... There it is. When my home got broken into, I felt it was my duty to do something else. This is not a murder trial.
No, it's not. The lady's right. I feel bad for her. The crime's got to be punished.
They didn't have to give her a crime, man. There is a thing called mercy.
But did you hear what the judge said? The judge said she didn't want someone else pulling the same thing, and she was afraid that that might happen. But the reality still exists. These kids... Raised in a project, raised in some tenement. Where's the father? Oh, we don't know where the father is. We talked about a father here. We're talking about the mother, the grandfather. You know, the grandfather could have just let the whole family move in with him, you know?
Yeah, why didn't he do that?
So whoever the grandfather is, he's a real selfish. I'm kidding. I'm sure, Grandpa, you got your reasons. Like, you don't want a couple of screaming brats around. I understand. All right, coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, we've got Charlie the Fountain talking about how much money we're going to spend to watch the Super Bowl. Talk about taxes. Talk about Obama. It's all coming up. World famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445. Phil.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Suddenly, I heard somebody shouting to Hitler's attendant, "Linger, linger."
Meet me. I've never ever went a day without seeing them all.
What do you consider yourself, Ted? Are you?
Yeah.
Are you bi? Are you?
I think it's a great tool that enables an officer to not have to reload his.
And he pulled his pants down.
Jawohl, I said.
You blew it.
And your wife said the same thing.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about and where truth is our bitch, and we continuously wander those wildernesses and we scale those heights that other talk shows wish they could and they cannot. Are you selfish for spending money on the Super Bowl? Are we lying to the government? Would the money be better spent? How would the money be better spent? Our next guest, Charlie the Fountain, tells us how this hour. Plus, still to come tonight, Walmart offers a new anti-aging makeup product for 8-year-olds. If you're ready for that, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and online at the Phil Hendry website, philhendryshow.com. After our show tonight, you can go and see a show log. You can also take a look at all the other blogs that we have written on our website. You can access thousands of hours of archived material. Go to the Phil Hendry Show merchandise store and pick up our archived Best of CDs. It's a beautiful thing, and we're talking about Best of CDs from 97 on forward, brand spanking new, not out of the rack. This is all new stuff, so it's sort of, sterling silver or something. All right, not sterling silver, but you know what I mean. I don't work in an antique store, so I don't know the lingo. 877-876-PHIL. Charlie the Fountain is a blogger. He's also a analyst. He's been on MSNBC, has written for Huffington Post, is joining us here tonight to talk about this story. A new survey from the National Retail Federation predicts that come February the 6th, which is Super Bowl Sunday, that'll be in about a week and a half, Super Bowl partiers will spend $10.1 billion, with 171 million people planning on watching the game, the most in the survey's history. Of those, 34.9 million, or 15% of the viewers, plan to host their own parties, etc., etc. Charlie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Phil. I appreciate you having me on your program.
And this is a number that you saw, and you immediately wrote a blog about it and got a whole lot of people up in arms about it. What are they up in arms about?
I think we've got people who are up in arms over the fact that the president has stated that the country is in need of some level of taxation in order for us to begin to get a handle on not only the deficit spending, but eventually someday, God willing, that we are attacking the national debt. And through it all, the president's been taking quite a bit of heat from all manner of people, not just those in the Congress, but also commentators on the right. A lot of the right-wing commentators, like O'Reilly and these people, have taken their pot shots at the president. We find out that there's $10 billion the American people are going to be throwing away this weekend. And they're throwing it away on what? They're throwing it away on... I'm not against football. I want to make this very clear, because I...
That's not a politically correct stance to take, is it?
No, it is not a politically correct stance to take. I'm not a big fan of football. I'm a hockey fan myself, coming from the Northeast as I do. But I will say, I understand football is very important, but how important is it to the people who watch football to be seen as human beings who have a integrity and not be hypocritical? And I think there's some hypocrisy on the part of the American people when they say that they're busted, they can't squeeze another nickel out of them, that they've given all they can give, and here they are with $10 billion that they've got to throw away. And I think I'm saying this very accurately, to throw away.
Well, some people would say they're not throwing it away.
I know, I understand that.
This is how we enjoy ourselves in America. We have our Super Bowl and we have our World Series. You know, these are the national parties that we throw for ourselves. The 4th of July is another one. Super Bowl Sunday is another one. There's not that many. And Americans don't, you know, we don't bust it out all that much. You know?
Well, you're looking at, I'm not talking about Christmas, you know. I'm not talking 4th of July as a national holiday. I'm talking about the celebration of something that's not a national holiday. It's not a religious holiday. It's a Super Bowl. And we're giving $10 billion to multi-billionaires. That's the part that bothered me when I first saw the number. And, you know, we have a federal deficit, and we have a national debt. So I do find it interesting, and I do find it troubling that people say that there's no more money to give when it comes to the national debt.
We're talking to Charlie DeFountain here. He is a blogger for the Huffington Post. He's also one of the analysts on MSNBC. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. Charlie, you're walking right into the crosshairs here of something. You're saying you're taking on the Super Bowl, you know.
No, I'm not taking on the Super Bowl. No, not at all.
Well, you're taking on, if you've got 171 million people planning on watching the Super Bowl, and you've got $10 billion being spent, those people are spending that money for one reason. They want to buy their hot dogs, whatever the hell they're buying, right?
No, they're buying their merchandise. They're giving all this money, all of this $10 billion to this event. Now, I would not have a problem with that if I was not listening to one congressman after the next telling me that the American people are tapped out, that they have no more money, that there's people, I've been told, have been out of work for 3, 4, 5 years. Now, how is that possible? We've got 171 million people planning on watching this. The country has 300 million. That's over half the population of this country. And you can bet your bottom dollar that most of them are adults. And I guess a lot of them are out of work, but they've got enough money to spend on a Super Bowl. So the ideal here is an injunction. And
well, yeah, an injunction against what? You're talking about, I know that you were mentioning an injunction against the showing of the game.
An injunction against the showing of the game so that we can garnish the $10 billion that they would spend otherwise, and garnish that and use that against the national debt. So this would be a national emergency tax of $10 billion, a federal injunction against the broadcast of the Super Bowl. The reason would be given in federal court, and this can be an injunction that the federal government, in the person of Attorney General Holder, the reason given that the finances of this country are in such disastrous shape, that the finances of this country are teetering on a complete and utter default of the federal government, that there needs to be an injunction against the Super Bowl game so that this money is not spent by the American people and thrown into the private sector of the private, okay, and that these people are not out of money, and that, they say they're out of money, they say they're out of work, they can spend $50 on would you go get the spread of a dip, and they get cheese, veggies, and they spend it on the new TV, and that they're liars, and that we need to have this emergency tax. Now, you can do that in the federal court. And
what is the likelihood there's going to be a federal injunction against the showing of the Super Bowl?
That's not likely at all. It's not likely at all, unless we get some political will behind it. But when I see this, $10 billion...
Now, you say you're not a football fan.
No, I'm not.
So you don't really understand, I would guess...
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, my brothers played football in high school. I was a hockey player all my life, and I love hockey. And I saw the story. I was very troubled by the story of the anti-Semitism in the NHL, which I would love to talk about, because I'm Jewish, and I played hockey, and I played it very well, and I don't want anyone saying... somehow Jewish people don't play hockey, because I not only played hockey, I got in a lot of fights. So I don't know what they're talking about. But the fact of the matter remains, I love sports, but I don't like to see the country broke. And $10 billion going into the pockets of a guy that makes cheese dip, going into the pockets of vegetable dip man guy, this is, to me, a waste of money.
All right, so you've said something very, very controversial, a federal injunction against the showing of the Super Bowl, because that would keep people from spending that money on the Super Bowl. But the fact of the matter is, it's not going to happen. The money's going to be spent.
I know that.
Yeah, okay, so really, what's the point of what it is you're saying?
My point, more than anything else, Phil, is to show to football, to show to the government where the money is, first of all. The government... to the elected or the leaders say there's no money. Well, there it is right there. There it is right there. You tell me the American people got no money. There it is, right? $10 billion. $10 billion that they're pulling out of their wallets and their pants, and they're spending it on the Super Bowl. The survey that you read says 4.5 million Americans will buy a new TV to watch the Super Bowl. All right. Now, the government should take that money. Because they don't need another television set. If you're broke and you're unemployed and we're in a recession, what you don't need is a TV set to sit and stare at while you're broke, unemployed, and you drive yourself further and further into this hole of being a bum. And I don't think the American people see that.
Well, that's a very, very harsh critique. 4.5 million people...
No, it's not a harsh critique if you think about it. Sitting on your dead, excuse my language, on your dead ass, without a job, unemployed, a recession on, no money, and you're sitting in a room with no furniture, you're sitting in a room that is completely vacant, other than a wine stain on the rug or whatever, and you're sitting there, and you're watching your big TV, and your friends are over there sitting on the floor. Wouldn't you be embarrassed?
I don't know that that's what it is, man, you know.
Super Bowl, when it comes down to it, Super Bowl fans, how do I say this? Super Bowl fans, it's almost as if they would starve their own children. And I'm, if I sound angry, I am angry. I get angry at hypocrisy, I get angry, and I remember my own son, we threw him out of the house when he was 18 because we said, it's time for you to go. And when I first visited him 6 months later, he was there in his apartment with his girlfriend, and they had one beanbag chair and a giant TV and nothing else. No food, no nothing but the TV. And he says to me, hey, Dad, how you doing? All happy. And I said, you live like a bum, and you're telling me that you're all happy. And he said, yeah, he looked like the most hurt guy in the world, like I hurt his feelings. So I've seen this in my own family.
877-876-7445 here on the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445. Talking here to Charlie LaFountain as we talk about the Super Bowl and the amount of money that will be spent during the Super Bowl by all of us, all 171 million of us who are supposed to be watching it. $10.1 billion. Charlie says that proves that we're not out of money. It proves that we have more money that we can be taxed on, and that the hypocrisy of that is quite startling. Charlie, Super Bowl fans, football fans, Americans are working people too. They're not all unemployed. And to say that they're all selfish, I'm a football fan. I'm not a selfish man.
Well, we've got these D-baggers, and let's talk about it. Let's get down to it, okay? I'm not necessarily indicting you, but let's talk turkey, as as they like to say. Let's talk turkey. We got these D-baggers and these Republicans that are whining about no new taxes. They claim they can't afford them. They're lying. And I think it's time to say it. They're lying through their teeth. They can afford no taxes, and the proof is right here. The proof that these people sit around a teabag, and they want to teabag it, but they can't man up and pay up. And what we're talking about here, let's start paying back the debt that China buys off. You just did a whole hour on how the Chinese are not telling us how to raise our kids. The Chinese are telling us how to do everything. And now the Chinese are buying off our debt. I'm telling you that we need to get this under control, and we have to begin by showing the American people the very obvious source of the money here, $10 million, sitting on a floor with a beanbag chair and your girlfriend with a big widescreen TV, no furniture, no utensils in the kitchen, no car, and all of your friends over sitting on the floor looking at your new TV.
Now, do you really think that that's a Super Bowl party, that's a typical Super Bowl party?
I'm telling you, if the reality is what they're telling me it is, that the American people are out of work, out of money, but they're buying big screen TVs, the only thing that I can possibly say is that we're going to have 171 million people sitting on the floor with no furniture at all, no heating at all, freezing to death, looking at their big screen TV with 25 of their friends going, hey...
All right, 877-876-7445. Charlie the Fountain, liberal blogger and talking head, he paints a rather bleak picture of America, a country that has $10 billion to, as he says, throw away on Super Bowl Sunday, 4.5 million brand new TV sets, but everybody's out of work, everybody is it's a recession. So how is it that we can afford all of this? And he says, in a perfect world, a federal injunction against the showing of the Super Bowl and an emergency tax to collect this $10 billion for the federal deficit is what he would countenance and what he would encourage. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. With me is Charlie the Fountain. We're here at the Stage Door Deli in New York.
That's right. That's that little something to eat, Phil, and back to, actually going home. It's very late. But
sounds like there's a big crowd there.
A very good crowd here, right?
And we're talking about the Super Bowl, and we're talking about the $10 billion that will be spent at the Super Bowl, not at it, but by Americans around the country. And how you are very indignant, and you've written this blog.
Yes, of course I'm indignant. Phil, if I may interrupt you.
It just seems funny to me.
What is funny about an American who says, look at all the money that is being spent on a Super Bowl, and we're talking about a country that's broke? What's funny about that? Yes, of course I'm indignant. I'm indignant because I had a son that walked out of this house wanting his freedom one day, and when I went to see him with a check because he couldn't turn the heat on, he's sitting on the floor with his girlfriend, and they're watching a big screen TV. Now, I know that that boy, who I gave a check, a $5,000 check to last week, this week is going to have his friends over there. There won't be any furniture. There will be no utensils. There's not going to be a car. There won't be any heating. There won't be, I don't even think their water service is turned on. In fact, I know it isn't. They've turned on the electricity, and that's it.
And your son is living where? With no water?
He has no water, no. No. They cannot use the toilets.
And he's going to have a Super Bowl party. That's incredible.
But this is the American mindset. I'm bringing this up for a reason. This is not just my son. This is the American mindset. Rather than give that money to the federal government, they're going to use it to buy a big screen TV, chips and dip, and not even turn the heat on.
Well, then why don't they turn the heat on?
Well, they can do something with it, but they're not doing the right thing with it.
All right, 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show. Here is Rodrigo in Roanoke, Virginia. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Sir, go ahead.
Sir, my first question to you, I admire your sense of personal responsibility for advocating action.
Thank
However,
you.
Would you
Thank
advocate
you.
The same action for the Stanley Cup, for the Olympics? for the World Series.
It would depend upon the amount of money that is being brought in. The Super Bowl is an enormous amount of money. $10 billion in one day.
Think about that.
$10 billion in one day. I don't think there's any sporting event, any public event in America that demands that commands that kind of investment.
Really? Because they just rebuilt Yankee Stadium for the World Series after that. I mean, at a certain point, it's
Are you listening to what I'm saying? You're not even. Did you hear what I just said? $10 billion was spent by the American people in one day. What has Yankee Stadium got to do with anything?
Okay, but remember, that same $10 billion for those same guys who made cheese dip, onion rings, beer hats, all that stuff is stimulating the economy. That is jobs. That is people employed because someone is willing to spend that money. It all comes down to personal choices. Your son may not be making wise personal choices, but those are his choices as an adult. You can't sit there and make a generalization and say that
absolutely. I understand, sir. I understand, you, sir, and you're absolutely right.
Generalization, my issue is this. Congress wastes more money, my tax money that I'm paying. I would like to see it applied to other services. But instead it gets applied to services that I don't think are necessarily important.
I don't disagree with you, sir, that people will always complain about how the government spends money, but what am I doing? Charlie LaFond today is on the Phil Hendry Show, and I'm saying, let's start talking about how we make our choices. Now, you said we make choices. You're right. But choices have consequences. If a guy sits on the floor with his girlfriend in a beanbag chair and watches a big-screen TV and can't even turn the water on to flush the toilet, we get enough of those people. This country doesn't exist anymore. Would you agree with me there?
But again, because
of course you would.
Personal choices as an adult.
Personal choices ruin this country? Are you going to let those personal choices ruin this country, sir? You can't answer me. I can answer that question. I won't. I'm a patriot. I'm an American.
Look,
I believe in America, and I will not let personal choices ruin a great country. So that we want to buy a cheese dip, the platter, or you buy the platter with the cheese. That's what we want to do instead of helping the country.
Here's the issue I have with what you're advocating. Where do you determine who is the person? Who is the deciding factor to say that your choices are better than my choices?
You would let this country fail. You would let this country fail. To keep a guy that makes cheese platters.
No, I think Rodrigo's point is a very good point. It's a tough question to answer, but it's a good point. We got to take a break, sir, and hold on, Charlie. 877-876-7445. $10 billion will be spent on Super Bowl Sunday, and Charlie LaFontaine, the liberal blogger, MSNBC talking head, says, why doesn't the government get that money? I thought the American people were broke. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Phil Henry Show's 877-876-7445, 877-876-Phil. We're talking here with Charlie LaFontaine, a blogger. He blogs for the East Coast Observer, as well as a talking head on a number of the network news shows. And $10 billion spent on Super Bowl Sunday, something that you, Charlie, find personally offensive to the point where you wouldn't mind seeing an injunction against the networks to collect that money in an emergency tax. Now, as I said to you, you know that that isn't going to happen. And your point is, well, there's an awful lot of hypocrisy out there.
There's a lot of hypocrisy out there.
All right. Let me look at some of these other numbers. 4.5 million people say they will buy a new TV for the event, compared with 3.5 million who said they would last year, and the 2.7 who said they would in 2009. So it, despite a recession, we have from 2.7 million buying a new TV set in 2009 to the year 2011, 4.5 million people buying a new TV set. Is it not fair to say the Super Bowl is good for the economy?
No, it is not fair to say that. This is always the argument. Most of these teabaggers don't even watch a Super Bowl for the game. They watch for the commercial. How sad is that? That you don't know much about football, you pretend like you do, and you go over and you sit down on the floor at like my son's apartment I was mentioning, or my son's, you know, you sit down on the floor of some loser that's got nothing but a big screen TV, and you watch a football game, and all you want to see is the commercials. I say be a patriot, serve your country, turn off the Super Bowl, and donate the money to the federal government in some form. As a tax back, we don't want to have to tax people. We ask people to do the right thing. These people have no clue, and I'm telling you now, Phil, they're
well. Look at the commercials are popular.
The commercials are popular. So you're going to sit on the floor of my son's house, look at commercials, eating a vegetable platter. That's a lot of money to watch a commercial, and the people have no clue who's playing. But they're cheering when a Best Buy commercial comes out with Justin Bieber. Meh.
All right. I'll say this and we'll take a call. That young man that we talked to, if the American people make bad choices, if we make bad choices, we don't have a country anyway, man. How are you going to stop that from happening?
If you think I'm going to stand by and watch a great country go right down the and I don't want to use the word. You got another time. I would not let that happen.
What are you going to do, man? You're going to tax us and you're going to close the book. There's nothing. If people want to spend their money on the Super Bowl, that's what they're going to do. 877-876. Phil, here is Eli in Bakersfield, California. Eli, go ahead.
How you doing, sir?
Fine.
I just want to first make the point that our country is not broke. Like you said yourself, your son went out and spent money on a brand new TV. I already do give my money to the federal government. It's called my taxes. And I don't want to be told where to spend my money if I want to go and enjoy a game.
What do you mean our country's not broke? We just heard we've got a $12 trillion debt. A debt of $10 trillion. We have deficits of a half a trillion. So I don't know where you're getting your information, but we're broke. The $10 billion, why do you say we're not broke? Just out
of
curiosity.
Well, we're not broke. There's a lot of people out there working, and they spend their hard-earned money, and I can go out and spend $25 to the local market on the corner and help support him, help him feed his family.
But what about the debt? The national debt, $12 trillion. Who's going to pay for that? I know what you're going to pay, and it's the thing that
we're already paying for.
Our grandchildren.
Well, it probably eventually will, paying through that anyway.
Well, where? I don't see it.
Well, we're getting taxed.
We're not getting taxed. 35%. Back in FDR's day, it was a 94% tax rate.
Oh, don't give me. Look at. What are we talking about now? Do you want to take the $10 billion? You want an injunction to stop the Super Bowl?
I just don't want to see this young man, Eli, or my own son, sit on a floor in a house with no heating. No plumbing. Where are you going to watch the game, sir?
I go over with my in-laws, and we pull all of our resources together so we can enjoy a nice day together in leisure.
Okay. And when you say your in-laws, you pull all your resources together to what? To turn the heat on? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I don't want to see your son sitting on the floor either, but if someone makes bad choices, that's their prerogative. We can't save everyone in the country.
Are you doing that? You're doing the same thing, right? Sitting on a floor? Yes.
No, I'm not sitting on a floor. I work hard for my money, and I support my family the best that I can. I'm not sitting on a barren floor, and I don't have.
Are you sitting when you go to your in-laws' house? When you go over to your in-laws' house, you are sitting on furniture. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. And when you pool your money together, what are you buying? If you don't mind me asking you.
We're buying, drinks, we're buying food, we're buying vegetable platters, we're supporting the local economy.
All right, the vegetable platter right there. This is what I was talking about, Phil, these platters. Why can't this guy buy vegetables and cut them up himself? Well, they want to have the vegetable platter.
Well, they want to do what's convenient. They want to do what's convenient. The guy doesn't want to put his wife to work. You don't want to have the women want to enjoy themselves. So you get these platters, and I don't understand the nature of your question.
Are you buying alcoholic beverages, sir?
Yes.
Okay, that's it.
Well, people are going to drink beer.
Oh, they're going to drink beer. I just find the waste to be so abjectly. I find it disgusting. I'm not saying Eli, but I'm saying it's just disgusting to see the waste. This country desperately needs taxes, and we you have people pouring America's future down into their gullet, getting high on it, and then peeing it out at the end of the day. That's America's future. If you think of it that way, Eli, and I know it's ridiculous, but if every time you take a trip to the toilet on Super Bowl Sunday, take a look into that bowl, you're looking at your grandchildren. Oh, he's laughing.
It's pretty funny, man. It's pretty funny. Eli, thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What is funny about that?
I think it's funny. Say, take a look in that bowl. You're looking at your grandchildren.
Well, what I'm saying is I find it to be very sad that an entire country is going to take $10 billion and drink it away when we could use that money. Can you, Matt, think of that? Think if that was a relative of yours. Think if America and the people spending that money were one person. Let's talk about my son again. If that was my son, and he was spending that money to just drink away his sorrows on Super Bowl Sunday, I'd have to go and find him and do what John Adams did to his son. I cut you out of my will. I disown you. I don't have a son. And leave him there in the tenement, in the rat and roach-infested tenement that I found him in. The problem is my son is living in a house that his girlfriend's father owns, but they can't afford furniture.
Yeah, okay. 877-876-PHIL. Let's get on here to another call. Colin in Louisville. Go ahead, Colin. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'm just wondering where this guy's getting this whole idea about the Super Bowl and everything. I mean, that's like an American tradition. You're talking about just cutting it all out just to save money on taxes.
If we're broke, where are we getting $10 billion all of a sudden on one day?
The fact is, it's not the Super Bowl causing us to get broke. It'd be like saying, okay, if you're a hockey fan, let's cut out the Stanley Cup this year. Let's cut out the NBA playoffs. You can't sit there and blame it on them.
Stanley Cup doesn't make that money. Where does a country full of people who claim to be broke, where do they get $10 billion all of a sudden? Don't you think that that's a lie that the American people are telling the government?
You think it's every American's fault that we're going broke because the government can't handle the money?
The American people bear responsibility for electing these people who mismanage the government. You can't say it's not your responsibility. And then number two, you take money that we could use and you drink it away.
So you'd rather cut out an American pastime, an American tradition, than hold those that are accountable for their actions.
I can tell you
that you're trying to make excuses. You're trying to make excuses for the wrong thing.
In emergencies, we didn't have football games, we didn't have football seasons. In World War II, I don't believe they had the NFL.
They didn't have the NFL at all. What do you mean in World War II?
Well, In World War One, I meant.
They didn't have the NFL in World War One.
You're talking about a whole different scenario.
They didn't even have the NFL in World War One. They didn't have the NFL in World War One.
They didn't have TV.
What did you say, Henry? They had no football in World War Two, and they didn't have baseball either. Why?
Yes, they did.
Because it was.
Baseball.
Are you completely insane?
If they had baseball, then why did they have hockey? What are you talking about? Why did they have a league of their own, the women? Because there were no men.
Yeah,
they had Major League.
There was no Major League Baseball.
Yes, there was Major League Baseball. Yes, there was. It just wasn't the high quality of player because.
What, all the good ball players got drafted, but the bad ones stayed here? Are you kidding me?
They used a lot of.
You guys don't know what you're talking about. I'll tell you something else.
I'm going to interrupt. I understand what you're saying, that in the times of emergency, sometimes things get suspended. I get it. But this gentleman's question, Colin's question, is a good one. Why should football fans be penalized because there was mismanagement? I'm not even willing to say that there's been mismanagement of the government so much as there's been mismanagement of the private sector. The government shouldn't have bailed out, okay?
Right, exactly. The banks, those idiots. How many of those banks are giving money to the Green Bay? I don't even know the name of these teams. Is it one of them called the Steelers?
Yeah.
Okay. How many of these banks, these crooked banks, are bailing out the Green Bay Packers? What's it called?
The Green Bay Packers, and nobody's bailing them out. They've been around for years. If you knew anything about football, these teams have nothing to do with the national deficit. The fact that people want to get together with their families and enjoy what freedom they do have as Americans to watch a game and teach their kids lessons about life and how to have fun and enjoy themselves, no matter how bad it gets out there in this world, You still have your family to go with and be with.
What do you mean teach lessons about life? What does football teach you? Lessons about life.
It's not just about the game. It's about life in general.
What
you
is?
Go to work every day, so you get to spend one day and one quality time with your family, your brother, your children, and you sit there and have fun with them and enjoy
and
that
And you have
time.
Fun, yeah. And remember what Plato said. We need our games. They reflect our subconscious.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hey. Mr. Henry has been our guest speaker today at the ladies. What an ego.
Oh, well, don't mock me for that, okay?
Well, what is it with Plato? This gentleman, Colin, who sounds like a very nice young man, you know who Plato is, sir?
Yeah.
You do?
And I didn't even go to college. I went in the Marines.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. You've been insulting here, Charlie, in trying to make a point about the national deficit.
No, I haven't insulted anyone.
In trying to make a point about the national deficit, the national debt, you say, let's put it on the back of football fans. Hey, here's a $10 billion. You're almost like the guy who picks a pocket. You say, look at that fat-looking cat walking up the stairs. See that big billfold? We can grab it.
You're calling me a thief.
Well, I mean, it's the way a thief thinks. I need a bunch of cash. I need it fast. Look at this dude here, man. This is an opportunity.
I said that we should have a legal injunction against the game.
You know it's not going to happen that way. All right, I thank you very much, Colin, for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll take a break here, 877-876-7445. We're talking about Charlie the Fountain about the Super Bowl. $10 billion will be spent on that day. Why aren't we giving it to the government to pay off the national debt? Why are we drinking it away, as Charlie said? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in our news hour. With me is Charlie the Fountain, blogger for the East Coast Observer. I got that name wrong, Charlie, before I apologize. And MSNBC and the Huffington Post. And we're talking about the Super Bowl with $10 billion. $10 billion the American people will pay on that day. Now, you have said, Charlie, that it is blatant hypocrisy for the American people to claim that they're broke or that they don't have any money and then show that they have $10 billion. It's really not the point, though, is it?
I think it's the point.
But when people say, I may not be broke, but I have every right to spend my money the way I want to spend it.
Look, I just looked at a commercial film on television. I know it was a commercial. It was on that Anderson Cooper. And they showed a picture of Elton John and another man, and they had a baby. And the first thing that came into my mind, and you're going to think I'm being funny, and I'm not. They censored that picture. They would not show Elton John with a baby. And the guy that Elton John is married to, he's married to a man, and they adopted a child. And the first thing that came into my mind was Packers, Green Bay Packers. So a gay, you could call it a homophobic joke, came into my mind because of the preoccupation of America with football. Now, I would tell you that $10 billion is a big amount of money that people have to drink away, to eat away, and to throw away without turning on the heat, buying furniture, and sitting on a floor.
You got everybody sitting on a floor and in the cold with no heat.
That is how my son's watching the Super Bowl, and he's having his friends over. And they don't have flushing toilets. They have, I don't even know if the sewer line is hooked up. And
I thought you said this is a home that's owned by his girlfriend's father.
It is, but I don't know that he knows they are there. I think they're squatting, and that's the point I'm trying to make. We've got a country full of people who need to be helped. My son's one of them, and yet he doesn't understand that he needs the help. He wants to go ahead and take the money that we could use to help him and drink it away.
Is your son an alcoholic?
Not at all, no. But on that day, Super Bowl Sunday, he likes to just drink. He and his friends. Because he thinks it somehow will earn him his manhood. Well, I'm here to tell you, no, it won't. And again, Elton John with his wife, which is his husband, I should say, is the two men. Why would a homophobic joke like Green Bay Packer come into my mind? Because we're preoccupied with it.
No. You know, that's not us. I think that's more your problem. 877-876-7445. Elizabeth, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a question, Charlie.
Charlie, you work really hard for your money, don't you?
What's that, ma'am?
Charlie, you work really hard for your money, right?
I work hard some days, and other days it comes a little easier.
Okay, when the man called and said he's going to spend time with his family and he's going to spend his money on his activities for the Super Bowl, he has every right to do that, just like you had the right to take $5,000 and give it to a child of yours who doesn't appreciate it. And that's why you're complaining. I think you're very angry because your son doesn't appreciate how hard you work for your money.
Well, I said that I don't work that hard. That's number one. And
well, you know what we're talking. It's your money, right?
Of course. It's my money, yeah. But I don't work that hard. I don't know what the lady's referring to.
We're talking about money that we work for.
All right, but the second point that I want to make is that my son is representative of the American people who would rather take $10 billion.
Charlie, my father never would give me $5,000. He'd tell me to go work for it. You wasted your money, and then you turned around and said,
Are you sitting on the floor? Were you sitting on the floor?
You wasted your money on your son, and you're telling us we waste our money on Super Bowl. And I think you're just an angry father.
I think if your father wasn't going to give you money, it's because you're not living sitting on a floor with no flushing toilet.
My father taught me how to work for my money. He never gave it to me. I earned it.
My point is, you were living in a home at that time where you flushed the toilets and you had furniture. My son does not live in a home like that.
I went out and lived in a studio apartment until I had enough money to get a bed for myself. Your son doesn't appreciate your money. Don't give it to him anymore.
Did the toilets flush is all I'm asking you. Did the toilets flush?
Now, let's assume that the toilets flushed in her house.
All right. So the toilets flushed in her house. So she had it great. There are a lot of Americans, they don't have that. We need to find ways to help them. Now, Elizabeth and my son and others on Super Bowl Sunday are going to sit and drink the day away.
Charlie,
that's what makes...
Charlie, you never taught your son how to appreciate working for his money, so he does have toilets that flush. And that's my whole point. You're angry. And don't take it out on the American public.
I'm angry at the American people for being so selfish that they're going to drink away their day on Sunday when we could use that money to pay down the debt. Am I angry at my son? Yes, I am angry at my son.
Well,
I'm angry at the fact he's got 30 of his friends coming over and they can't flush a toilet.
Don't give him any more money, and then he can earn it himself. If he doesn't like his toilets not flushing, he can figure it out. It's not your problem.
Let me ask you something. You want me to see my own son carried frozen stiff out of that apartment by emergency services. Is that correct? That's what you want me to do. And his girlfriend. Because that's what's going to happen if I don't give him money. They're going to carry out a frozen stiff carcass. I was in Vietnam. Have you ever seen that? Because I have. I've seen a guy frozen.
What do you mean frozen in Vietnam?
In Korea. Excuse me. Yes?
Is your son an invalid, Charlie?
Mentally, yeah. I would say, and I'm not trying to be funny, mentally I think he is an invalid.
Are you being serious?
No.
Did you give him a good education?
I didn't think I had to teach him how to flush a toilet.
All right, coming up, we've got the news hour. Thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Oh, wait, I'm not finished with her. I didn't teach him how to flush a toilet. At least I didn't have to. His mother, she's the one that made him into a zombie.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Suddenly, I heard somebody shouting to Hitler's attendant.
My girls need me. I've never, ever won a day without...
I think it's a great tool that enables an officer.
My name is Roger Ebert. I love the Phil Hendry Show, and I think Keith Olbermann is a closet homosexual.
F you.
Double, I said.
Whatever. We're world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, a news talk and information show, an entertainment show that knows where it's going, baby. What? I'm completely screwing it up. Knows what it's talking about. And we go anywhere where other talk shows dare not tread. You know, kind of like that, all right. Walmart is offering a new anti-aging makeup product, and why not? Eight-year-olds really need that, and that's what Walmart is offering, an anti-aging product for eight-year-olds. Have we lost our minds? In some ways, yes, we have. Do we see the world around us? No, we do not. Are we completely narcissistic? Yes, we are. Are we okay? Yeah.
You think so?
Not really. Anyway, Dennis Kucinich files a lawsuit demanding $150,000 over a dangerous sandwich because it was an olive pit, and there you go. Plus, Does the Anaheim Ducks hate? Who wrote this?
I did.
Do the Anaheim Ducks hate Jews?
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Do the Anaheim Ducks hate Jews? Yes. No, I don't know. We'll talk about it. And we'll put that in the same segment with Hitler's bodyguard. So the whole thing sort of, you know, Jews, the Anaheim Ducks, and Hitler. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams?
Man, well, how far do you have to dig to find that?
I didn't dig at all. It was right there on the front page of the, not the front page.
No, it was big news. We might as well start with it. 877-876-PHIL. We'd like to thank everyone that participated this evening. Had a great second hour. And Bobby Dooley is still bothering me over the fact that she didn't get any phone calls in the first hour. And I said, hey, you know what? Some people, you're just off-putting, Bobby. And she, for the very first time, and I've known her, she's very well-dressed, she's very pretty, she's had a lot of work done, but she's very pretty. She actually broke wind and laughed and then walked away.
You're kidding.
No. Jewish hockey player sues the Anaheim Ducks, alleging anti-Semitic remarks hurt his career. Today, me and Rance were exchanging comments via Twitter, and we were basically talking about Jewish hockey players down through the years. Rance didn't feel there were any of note. I said, well, Bob Nystrom was on the Islanders. They won five Stanley Cups, and he went big deal. And then I said, what about Gump Worsley? He said, he's not Jewish. I know, but it sounds that way. So anyway.
You said Dave Tiger Williams.
Dave, he's not Jewish.
Who's Dave Tiger Williams?
Dave Tiger Williams was a guy who had a face that was so flat they used to say he could bite a wall. You know that?
What are you talking about?
Dave Tiger Williams. I was joking with Jason. He said, "What are other Jewish players?" I said, well, Dave Tiger Williams. I was kidding. Dave Tiger Williams had see how my nose is? See how I'm pushing my nose in?
Yeah.
That's what he looked like.
Man, what happened to him?
He got his face beat in a bunch of times playing hockey. So he had a face so flattened out, they used to say he could bite a wall. If you ever saw him play, and I saw him play in the late 70s, I mean, ugly? Oh, man.
What's the point of wearing a helmet?
Good point. There's some guys, you know, just a word to the wise, the NHL, there's some guys, their kissers are so beat in and their heads are so scrambled, there's no point in them wearing a helmet. Why do you make them wear a helmet? You know? And Dave Tiger Williams wore a helmet. Why he wore a helmet, I don't know, because his face got punched in so many times. He should have worn, like, one of those hockey face masks. Anyway, this is a true story. I don't mean to make light of it. It's disturbing. And it's doubly disturbing because you realize north of the border, the Canadians still don't get it. I'm kidding. Although, I'm not really. A Jewish hockey player sued the National Hockey League's Anaheim Ducks on Tuesday, claiming that coaches of one of its affiliate teams subjected him to harassment and anti-Semitic marks. Guess where it was, folks? Bakersfield, California. Jason Bailey is seeking unspecified damages in the actions filed in Orange County Superior Court against the Anaheim Ducks, the Bakersfield Condors, and coaches Martin Raymond and Mark Peterson. Alex Gilchrist, director of media and communications for the Ducks, said, quite simply, sorry, we can't comment. According to the complaint, Bailey endured, quote, a barrage of anti-Semitic offensive and degrading verbal attacks regarding his Jewish faith from Raymond, head coach of the Condors. Raymond, according to the lawsuit, would say they, referring to Jews, only care about money and who's who. It also claims that Raymond said he never wanted his son to be raised Jewish or to wear a yarmulke. Assistant head coach Peterson made anti-Semitic remarks about Bailey. The suit alleges, including, well, I don't know if we can trust him with the money. He's Jewish. Hmm. Bailey, who was drafted in 2000. Can I interrupt right here and say something?
Go ahead.
Jews can make those kind of jokes about each other. Black guys can call each other the N-word. Get with it and get with it straight. All of the goyim, all of the whiteys, all of the people that think they're down. You can't do that. Understand it. You can't do it.
I don't get what's so offensive on a guy saying about money.
Did you just hear what I said?
What?
Are you Jewish?
No.
Then don't even go there. You understand? When you're a bunch of freaking stupid Canucks, maybe this guy Raymond, you think this guy Raymond is Jewish?
No, he said he never wanted his son to be raised Jewish or wear a yarmulke. Maybe married to a Jewish girl.
Yeah, could be. You got a bunch of stupid-ass hockey players, and they don't know their ass from 40 cents a week anyway about anything. The last thing you're going to do, whether you're an American or Canadian, you're not going to get into the Jew-baiting and the jokes. That's what the Jewish guys do with each other. They can call each other the devil. They can say that the horns are springing up. They can talk about how cheap each other is. That's what they do. Black guys do the same thing with each other. The rest of us shut up and butt out. And, you know, the thing that really cracks me up, some of these white boys, they want to get in on everything, man. They want to get in. They, you know, because you're talking the way I think it will. Hey, man, I want to talk about the Jews, too. Hey, I want to talk about the blacks, too. Look at white boy. Just stay the hell out of it, all right? Because it just, and people can say it's not fair, and maybe it isn't. But then what seems to be the problem here that you want to talk about Jews? Why don't we talk about Canadians? This is why I've spent like the last half of my career making jokes about white people, and they don't like it. Some of the most thin-skinned people in the world are whites when you start making jokes about them.
Well, what are you going to say about a white man that's that funny?
I don't know. Let's start with the mayonnaise and the Velveeta, and we can work from there. But, I, you know, in any event, Bailey, who was drafted in 2005 by the Ducks but has not played in the NHL, was rarely given ice time and was not provided with resources that were fully available to the hockey players who were not Jewish, he argues, whatever those could be.
Don't Jews like money? That is correct, ain't it?
Man, he just got dumped on. You can't talk about it.
Well, don't they like money?
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, well, okay, but they like money and they know how to make it. You like money and you drink it away. And
will you shut up about me drinking stuff away?
Ain't you Irish?
That doesn't mean I'm drinking anything away. Oh, now I get it. Now I get it.
Well, you talk about a Jew.
I didn't talk about anything. I was telling you two guys to shut up. You especially, Robert.
Why, because I'm black?
Yeah, because you're black.
Oh, I can't talk about how an Irish man drinks his money away.
You know what? I don't give a damn, man. But now you're saying, because I'm part Irish, this is what I do with my money. Is that it? You know, I haven't had a drink in 6 months.
Maybe you ought to have one. Loosen things up around here the way that everything's going.
Oh, okay, bud. Well, whatever you say. In the minute I take a knock, you're going to start saying, there goes the Irish guy drinking again.
Maybe.
Look, let's keep the eye on the ball and the story. The story here is, now, Bailey, who was drafted, I already read that part. According to the lawsuit, Bailey, in 2009, complained to the Bakersfield coaches about the anti-Semitic hostile work environment and spoke to Anaheim Duck assistant general manager David McNabb, who told him the organization found his complaints unbelievable. There's a whole lot of people are going to get their ass fried. You understand that, don't you?
I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't want to say nothing, but being an Irish guy, are you... I don't want to say nothing.
No, go ahead.
Well?
Yeah, go ahead, tell him.
Do you feel, on account of your Irish, you can understand that story?
Why? You don't think I can understand somebody else's plight?
No, but if you have had enough to drink, that the brain cells are ruined.
So I've drunk too much that my brain cells are ruined, is that it?
Well, see, that's the thing we were worried about.
Oh, okay, so let's just get, you're black, so you're lazy. You, I don't know, what you got a plate in your head, so you're mentally retarded.
No, I'm not.
No, what I think, I'll just say that you are. And I'm Irish, so my brain cells are shot, so I don't understand what I'm reading. Yes, I do. How about that? I guess the alcohol doesn't affect my brain cells the way it does you guys. Anyway, Bailey was sent to the Iowa chops?
Yeah, they were called a pork. That's why I found out they were the pork chops.
The Iowa pork chops? What the hell is that supposed to mean?
That's what they were going to call them. They just shortened it.
He was sent to the Iowa chops where he got no playing time, according to the athlete and according to the lawsuit. The Ducks tried to send him to the Central Hockey League, but when he claimed the move would be a breach of his contract, the team backed down and suspended Raymond and Peterson briefly and told them to write apology letters. Now, this is interesting. Let's just follow this. Now, understand something else. This is what the player is claiming. We have not yet heard from the other side. Now, when these lawsuits are filed, the public filing, you can see, but you don't get to see the response. So, and you can put just about anything you want into a lawsuit, you know,
But you're going to get like, what do you call it?
Perjury?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, no, not really. Anyway, so he says that he went to the Condors. Then he went to the Ducks. They found his complaints unbelievable. So then he was traded off of the Condors and sent to the Iowa Chops. These are minor league teams.
Right. But I just want to say, are you defending the Jew-hating Ducks? Or
you just shut up about the Jew-hating Ducks.
You sound like that's what you're doing.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to get through the story.
The Jew-hating Ducks. Next up on ESPN.
Then I'll say that on a game coming up on Wednesday night. The Jew-hating Ducks take on the Chicago Blackhawks.
All right. Hey, what about that? The Chicago Blackhawks, Anaheim Jew-hating Ducks. All right, so the Iowa Chops, when he got into playing time, the athlete contends. The Jew-hating Ducks, I'm sorry, tried to send him to the Central Hockey League, but when he claimed the move would be a breach of his contract, which meant he didn't want to go any place that was a toilet bowl, the team backed down and suspended Raymond and Peterson briefly. So they tried to trade him, and they said, well, okay, well, let's just suspend these coaches and have them write apology letters. Bailey claims the letters were insincere. In one, Peterson allegedly wrote, I guess I never stopped to think about the impact my statement would have on you or how it would make you feel. It was not intended to insult or hurt you in any way, but it did, and for that I'm truly sorry. That does sound like horse dung.
Why?
It was not intended to hurt you. A letter from Raymond states, as a French-Canadian, I too have come face-to-face with bigotry and understand how much remarks can negatively affect lives. He wrote that he no longer would continue his behavior according to the lawsuit. That sounds sincere to me. The lawsuit contends that Bailey was the victim of religious discrimination, harassment based on religion, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and retaliation. It claims he lost income, benefits, and suffered humiliation. Bailey, who was traded, now plays right wing for the Binghamton Senators, a farm team for the Ottawa Senators. The Ottawa Senators Hockey Club does not comment on legal matters regarding members of the organization and those under contract, said Phil LeGault, vice president for communication. Somebody said send them to Siberia. And they said, oh, you mean Ottawa. So Siberia is like, I guess, playing up there in those cold weather teams. So we'll find out what happens there, whether the Jew-hating, I shouldn't call them that. Anyway, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Hitler's bodyguard won't sign any more autographs unless they come from the staff of the Anaheim Jew-hating Ducks. And we're kidding.
Hey, you're never going to get on. They're going to sue you.
Hey, but they can't sue me. I this is my thing, man. I get to, you know.
What do you mean that's your thing, man?
Hey, this is what I do, huh?
Oh, like Robert De Niro. Hey, this is what I do, huh? Hey.
Hey, it's what I do, huh? Anaheim Jew-hating Duck.
Get up.
Lousy Jew-hating Duck.
Good news for 8-year-olds concerning if you're showing signs of age and you're 8. Good news. Walmart's got a nice anti-aging cream for you. Isn't that, you know, really? The kids are crying now. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL and the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back with more of this horse dung. This is nuts.
Phil Hendry.
We'll be right back with a Jew-hating duck.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back.
Just because he is.
You know something? Don't be so stupid, man. Can you walk up to a black guy and call him the N-word? Can I do that, Robert?
No.
Then you can't be some guy on the outside, some goyim, some, you know, Anglo-Saxon waspy guy jumping around with the Jew jokes. Jewish guys say that to each other? Great. But here's a couple of dumbass Canucks up there in Bakersfield. Hey, Jew this and Jew that, because they're dummies. I'm telling you, you know, I hate to be cruel and I hate to, but I can see this thing, how this thing all unfolded. These are a couple of guys from north of the border. And, you know, as nice as Canadians are, they don't have to contend with the kind of society that we do. We have a multiracial society here. We've got a large minority population. Canadians think that they're all down with equal rights. They got 5 Indians, 6 black guys, 3 Jews, and they think, oh, well, we got it figured out. Then they come down here to the States, because this is where most of the hockey teams are. And they start laying some of their Canadian point of view on a Jewish guy, and they get sued. And the Ducks, you know, you guys are you're going to have some problems here, man. You know, I don't know what you're going to have to pay out, but you will have to pay. You know it. All right, the 10 most common job interview questions. Buddy, you ready?
Yeah. You're going to interview me, right?
Yes, I'll interview you.
Why did he interview you?
You want to interview me?
Yeah, well, I thought it'd be better that way.
All right. You have the 10 most asked questions?
Yeah, these are 10 most job interview questions. Okay, number one, tell me about yourself.
Well, I was born...
What interests you when you're...
You shut up and give me those. I'll do it, okay?
What's the matter?
Well, you're not going to interrupt me. What? He says, tell me about yourself, and I start to talk, and he's on to the next question.
Well, it was boring.
What was?
There is.
It was boring, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, bud, tell me about yourself.
Well, it's a long story. I was born in California, but then I was also raised in Missouri because my dad, that's where he lived. And my mom and dad lived, well, my mom lived in too, so then I lived there too.
Okay, so you and your mom and your dad lived together in Missouri.
No, my dad went there. I was born there, and my dad and my mom and I lived there.
So you and your mom and your dad lived in Missouri, right?
No!
Why can't I get this? Let me go to the next question. What interests you about this opening?
You ought to smile when you say that.
Yeah, well, that sounds dirty. But
all right, get out of here, will you?
You asked me what interests me about an opening.
You know, your mind is in the gutter, man. Don't be pointing at that picture. What interests you about this job?
Not much right now.
All right, let me go to the third question then. And if you try to do comedy, you know what's going to happen, man. I'm going to... Number three. What do you know about our company so far?
It's not very well run.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's an answer.
Yeah, I want to tell you, Mr. Henry.
Okay, what's not well run about it?
Well... I think the host of the show is weak. I think that Mr. Dickman and Mr.
My name is Leonard.
I'm sorry. Mr. Leonard.
All right. Get out of here, man, because I don't want to talk to you anymore. So these are the number 10 most common job interview questions, okay?
No, I don't want to talk to you anymore, okay?
Just because I was given honest answers.
You're trying to do jokes. Number one, tell me about yourself. Number two, what interests you about this opening, or why do you want to work for us? Number three, what do you know about our company so far? Number four, why did you leave your last job, or why are you looking, or why are you thinking about leaving your last job? These are always very explosive questions. You've been fired? Oh, well. Number five, tell me about your experience at blank. What experience do you have? Fill in each of the major responsibilities of your job. Tell me about your strengths. Tell me about that dress you're wearing. What, if any, marital status? No, it says number seven, tell me about your strengths. Number eight, tell me about a time when. And then they say, fill in with situations relevant to the position. For instance, tell me about when you had to take initiative, you had to deal with a different customer, you had to respond to this crisis. So these are questions about work experience. Number nine, what salary range are you looking for? Number 10, what questions do you have for me? And then you begin to ask the question, and he gets up and leaves the interview, and that's that. So,
The guy's not going to listen to our question?
No, I'm being a smartass, but who knows? The 10 most common job interview questions. The absolute best thing that you can do to prepare for a job interview is to practice your answers to questions that you're most likely going to be asked. Saying your answers out loud and over, or even writing them down, which might ingrain them more deeply in your brain, will significantly improve how well you perform when you're sitting in that interview. So go online, if you got time tonight, guys, if this interests you, and go over to U.S. News and World Report, 10 most common job interview questions, U.S. News and World Report. I wish I could have given you a little bit better reading of that, but Dickman thinks he's a smartass.
You asked me about what I think of an opening.
Uh-huh, and your mind is filthy. We'll be back here. David Axelrod, he says Obama's going to be jumping into the gun control debate. Oh, God, please don't. Please. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show and PhilHendryShow.com. There's Piers Morgan.
I like him.
Phil Hendry.
Website again, philhendryshow.com. Be looking at our merchandise store in the days to come because we're introducing our second piece of merchandise, which will be, as I'm holding up in front of our videocast camera right now, the Phil Hendry shot glass. This is a beautiful thing, and it is a very, very beautifully made, and the artistry that is rendered on it is solid, man. This ain't no dishwasher. This is dishwasher safe, man. This is not, doesn't come rubbing off. It's just quality work, which is what we do. So check that out. We also have our CDs available there, our legacy CDs, 97 forward, at philhendryshow.com. Walmart targets 8-year-olds with a new range of anti-aging makeup. This is about as weird as it gets. I don't know. Maybe I got to read the article.
Yeah, well, you ought to read it because it might be the reason that, you know, good one.
There ain't no good reason for, there's no good reason for an 8-year-old to have anti-aging makeup. Retail giant Walmart has added a new range of anti-aging makeup to its shelves aimed at young children. The new Geo Girl beauty line is aimed at the tween market of 8 to 12 years old and will include blusher, mascara, face shimmer, and lipstick that is mother approved as well as anti-aging products. There's even a body mist. According to the marketing team behind the line, the formulas are designed for young skin and contain natural ingredients like white willow bark, chamomile, lavender, goat testicles. I'm kidding about that.
Goat testicles?
I'm kidding. Calendula, which is in Iowa, isn't it?
Yeah, I went there 1 year.
Calendula, Iowa. No, it's calendula. It's some kind of an herbal. It's a flower. I don't know.
I think it's like a weed. Seriously, it's like a weed.
A weed, okay. As well as antioxidants, which are said to prevent aging. Joel Carden, executive vice president of We Make Young Kids Really Old Before... No, he's the executive vice president of Pacific World, the brand's manufacturer, says the line is designed for young children who want to use real cosmetics but with natural ingredients. I know young children that want to use real cosmetics but with natural ingredients, and I'm so grateful that...
Well, who are you talking to?
Oh, I was just talking to a bunch of 8-year-olds before we did the show tonight, and they all said we'd like to use, in their little squeaky kid voice, we'd like to use cosmetics with natural ingredients.
Where?
I'm kidding, man, okay?
Oh.
You had a kid saying, yeah, I'd like to have natural ingredients in my cosmetics. Most 8-year-olds are going to say, yeah, I'd like to use cosmetics.
Yeah, well, you know, like you were saying, your sister dressed you up as a girl.
Yeah.
My sisters did dress me up as a girl. When I was a little baby, when I was a little 4-year-old boy, my older sister dressed me up as a girl and put lipstick on me.
Do you use anti-aging products?
I hope so.
Get out of here.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, my sister put anti-aging lipstick. In any event...
You let your sister do that, man? I mean, that's almost like... I'm not saying you're gay, but...
I was 4, you idiot! Gay. Joel Carden is the executive vice, so you know about him. All, really, 69 products in the range will be paraben, phthalates, sulfur-free, a strategy that is designed to attract parents worried about the excess chemicals in makeup. Here's a great idea. Don't wear any makeup!
Yeah, but what if the kid goes out in the sun and they're going to be aging and everything?
You know something? I can understand. Let me just say this. I can understand wanting to keep skin nice and wanting to keep skin from aging. I understand it. I think this is a little young. I think when we start doing that and we you know, there's a term called helicopter parents. Have you heard that term?
Uh-uh.
What's that mean?
Well, in anticipation of your joke, it doesn't mean they fly helicopters, okay? It means they hover over the children. They hover over them, and every move they monitor. And these helicopter parents, of which we are, oh my God, who put this on?
I thought you wanted to see that TL and tiny tot tiara. What do they call that?
Toddlers and tiaras. This show is vile. It makes me want to puke my guts up. They dress these kids up like they're in their 20s.
Man, she's hot.
Will you dirty?
You can't say that, man.
Talking like that?
No, I didn't mean it. I was kidding.
Yeah, huh? Man, she's hot.
You ought to watch it, man.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, you did. I heard you do it. The Range will be on the shelves starting February the 21st. It's been developed to replace the Mary-Kate and Ashley Cosmetics range, which was previously sold until Heath Ledger died, and then they didn't want to have anything to do with either one of them, suspecting that maybe they did it to him. Now,
really?
No. They got rid of the Mary-Kate and Ashley stuff. Walmart says the targeted sector has an estimated $2 billion buying power. Oh, well, is that right? The targeted sector has an estimated $2 billion of buying power. All right, so what that means is the following thing. Obviously, the 8 to 12-year-olds don't control the money, but the mothers do. And those mothers that want their kids to wear makeup and anti-aging products and all of that other crap, they control $2 billion, so let's go for it, man. I just think there's something. I can understand that there's a concern for the aging of the skin, and perhaps we could call this a hygienic or good physical health, the health of the skin. But it's all here in makeup, and it's weird.
Well, not that I don't think it's that weird, man.
I think it's very weird. Why don't you think it's that weird?
Like you said, if they want to keep the skin nice, you know.
Yeah, I know. If they want to keep the skin nice, you can put that into sunblock, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You can put it into sunblock. You can put it into a lot of stuff. You're not going to put it into... Why is it in the makeup?
The kid ain't going to wear it unless it's makeup.
Well, guess what? You tell them they don't get to wear makeup. God, man, at what point do you say to the kid, sorry, you're not an adult yet?
Yeah, well, what if you want to put him in a fashion show?
I wouldn't put my kid in a fashion show, man, if they offered me... Well, I mean...
Yeah.
And if they offered me enough, yes, I would. But it isn't going to happen, so... David Axelrod, Obama will be jumping into the gun control debate. Oh, great. Although President Obama avoided talking about the contentious issue of gun control in Tuesday's State of the Union address, the top advisors say he'll soon be jumping... geez.
What's wrong with that?
I just don't want him saying stuff that's going to get these anti-gun weird asses. They talk about gun nuts. The bigger nuts are the gun control people. They've lost their minds. They always talk about gun nuts. I understand about gun nuts. What they're talking about are when they mean gun nuts, they mean this guy like this Lautner guy. That's a gun nut. But these cats that are anti-gun, they've lost their minds. They think that the control of guns eliminates criminality on some level. They think that the control of guns eliminates gun violence. All they do is they leave a public unarmed, you know, law-abiding citizens unarmed, while everybody, and they don't get that math. Now, maybe they do get the math, but they just hate losing the debate. And I think that that's probably it, you know.
Well, and that's a good point, you know, because pretty much everybody cut them off in the past, you know.
Yeah, they've been cut off in the past. Every damn argument they make, it's ridiculous. After a while, you want to say to these people, don't you get tired of being laughed at and having the logic of your ridiculous arguments torn to shreds and thrown back in your faces over and over and over again? Doesn't it bother you that you continue to have to use emotionalism to make your appeal because you have no law on your side? You don't have any logic on your side? You don't even have statistics on your side. You have to lie about the numbers. You have to create all of these scenes where somebody got killed because a gun was laying around a house. And in order to affect what you want to affect, even though it may not be a good thing. So you want this to come into play, to become reality, because you're lying about it.
That's about the best speech that I ever heard given. You ought to tell Barack Obama undo of it.
What did you just say, man?
I didn't understand that. Who?
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Yeah, okay, I understood that. It sounded like you went Bob Bama.
Yeah, I thought Bob.
No, I said Bob Bama.
What are you saying? Are you saying the president's name?
Yeah.
Say it.
Hold on.
Yeah, take a drink, because there was something wrong.
Bob Obama.
What are you talking about, man?
What's Bob Obama?
That's the president.
That ain't his name, man. Say it. Say it good.
Barack Obama.
Say it again.
Barack Obama.
There.
Man, you are... Talk about being a retard.
Don't say that, man. We're going to get in all kinds of trouble. All right. Anyway, Axelrod says the president's going to weigh in on this jazz. Mr. President, not that you're listening, although you may download our podcasts.
You messed up, too.
I said podcast. I meant pod. You may download our Barack Obama casts. If anybody out there downloads the podcast for the president and he listens to us, I would like to just say this. Sir, don't let these people push you into some anti-gun thing, man. We got other fish to fry. We can't get into this. Thank you. In a briefing with reporters aboard Air Force One on Wednesday, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, standing there with his gut hanging out and a button unbuttoned, holding on to a glass of orange juice, said, "I wouldn't rule out that at some point the president talks about the issues surrounding gun violence. I don't have a timetable, or obviously, what would he say?" And then Gibbs turned around and went and got scrambled eggs. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who runs the... Mayor Bloomberg, who runs the group Mayors Against Illegal Guns, said he was disappointed that Obama didn't take on gun control in his address. In discussing the terrible tragedy in Tucson, he missed an opportunity to bring the country together on the issue that has support among the vast majority of Americans, fixing the nation's broken background check system that is designed to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. Here's the only thing about that that I would say that I would agree with. The background check needs to extend to these gun shows and these swap meets. You know what I'm talking about? There are large holes in the system in terms of the background check, and even gun owners are in favor of this. So,
well, then it must be good.
Yeah, well, the way I said that. Well, even gun owners are in favor of this. But the point is, these gun shows, these open market shows, have not required background checks in some cases, and I don't know if it's a state by state thing. That's huge, man. So they do have to get that crap going, man. That's number one. Number two, if you look like Bud, you can't get a gun. Number three, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But that they do need to fix. Another notable absence in Obama's State of the Union speech was any mention of housing or the foreclosure crisis. Axelrod said that in the address on Tuesday, Obama wanted to talk about the discrete areas of growth and job creation. And the elements that go into that are just absolutely essential to a long-term strategy. He and National Economic Council Deputy Director Brian Beese, who was also at the meeting on the aircraft as they flew along there in Air Force One, said the administration will be talking more about housing in the coming weeks. Then he asked, were there any more questions? And they said no, and he went back and got waffles. All right. So that's the latest there on the president. Dennis Kucinich is on a war path against Olive Pitts and the sandwich that he bought there in the Senate cafeteria. It's just no good, man. It tasted like someone's rear end. He can't have that. Plus, Hitler's bodyguard won't sign any more autographs, so we're out of luck. Sorry, folks. We'll give you your money back. But maybe he'll friend you on Facebook. That is a chance. The Phil Hendry Show, and don't forget, philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. What?
Yeah, I'd say what you said.
I'm not going to say what I... Go ahead. Say it. I don't care.
You said it on a tiny toddler show, you'd beat up the mom.
No, I didn't. Here's what I said. I said that that show, I think, is such an exploitive show that I'd punch one of the moms, yeah.
What's the difference?
I didn't say I'd beat her up.
That's hitting a woman. I can't even believe it. You hit a woman and everything?
You know what, Bud, man, you make a big deal out of everything. You know, if you're going to smack a woman, shouldn't it be for, like, things, for instance, wouldn't you smack a woman if she stole $100,000 from your retirement and made off to Canada when they finally brought her back over the border? Would you belt her?
Yeah.
Okay.
But who cares about how she treats her kid?
Well, that's a good point. Hitler's last bodyguard gives up on fan mail. Well, that's too bad, because Robert and I were just talking about a great new business. We were going to basically be a clearinghouse for this guy. So
yeah, we could dummy up the autograph, too.
Yeah, Hitler's autograph was real retarded looking. So we could dummy it up. We could split the money here with this guy, Rochus Misch, age 93. And actually, we'd say we'd split it, but we'd rob him blind. And now, it ain't going to happen. In Berlin, more than 65 years after World War II, Adolf Hitler's last surviving bodyguard says that he can no longer respond to the continuous deluge of fan mail he receives. You ready for that? From around the world because of his advanced age. His name is Rochus Misch. He's 93 years of age. and he uses a walking frame to move around his apartment. He told the Berliner Courier that with most of the letters he receives asking for autographs, it's no longer possible to reply because of his age. He said the letters come from Korea, from Knoxville, Tennessee, from Finland, from Iceland. Not one has a bad word to say, says Misch, who is believed to be the last man alive to have seen Hitler and other top-ranking Nazis in the flesh. You know, these guys always say the same thing, though.
Yeah, they said nobody said anything bad.
Right. They always say, oh, well, I saw this thing on TV about a village in France that was wiped out by the SS, the same group that this guy belonged to, the Waffen-SS.
What's that mean?
What's what mean?
Waffle SS? You said it, Waffle SS.
I didn't say Waffle SS. Why don't you listen to what I'm saying, man? Waffen. Waffen. It's German for war, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Anyway, they killed everybody, man. You're hearing me?
Yeah.
They killed everybody. Now they're talking to some scumbag who was with the SS in France at the end of the war when this slaughter took place. And he says, oh, they like us in the town. Every time we go in there, we say we're SS men. They go, I was SS in the World War, and they're just really nice to us. I mean, you imagine a guy like that?
Maybe he's right, man. Maybe they're afraid of him still.
I think they're I think those SS guys, all those old guys that are still alive, those Krauts, I think they're the lionest pack in the world. And this old creep, I'm sure he does get fan mail. No question about it.
Yeah, man, there's all kinds of Nazis out there. Why wouldn't you believe that?
I don't believe that that guy goes into that village in France and they're kissing his ass.
Well, you said it before I knew it's Waffen. You said waffle, but if it was for the waffles, see, but it doesn't make any sense now.
Man, you sound like an idiot.
You do sound like an idiot. Going into the French town for what?
Waffles.
They ain't going in there for waffles, man. I don't know why they're going in there. They should stay away. That town, I don't know the name of it. It was a city in France. There was all kinds of towns in Europe. In Italy, in France, the Waffen SS was the fighting, it was the military arm of the SS. They were, in other words, instead of just being SS guys that went around and beat up Jews like they did in Germany, these guys went out and actually fought and then killed civilians too, see? So they, you know.
So they killed two birds with one stone.
Yeah, kill two birds with one stone. Kill the enemy, and also when there's some civilians that they can kill, they do that too. So they did it all, man. And they got towns in Italy, in France, you name it, man, that the Waffen SS went into and butchered everybody alive. Now, this old creep, probably they didn't put this guy on trial for any war crimes, because...
Well, he's hanging out with Hitler most of the time.
He was one of Hitler's close guys. Yeah, he is actually in the bunker when the war ended, and he was operating the telephones, I think. His name is Rochus Misch. He's 93 years of age. Let's listen to him now. In an interview with the BBC, Mr. Misch describes his first encounter with the Führer.
The chief adjutant des Ganzen.
My first meeting with Hitler was rather strange. I'd been in the job 12 days. Then Hitler's chief adjutant, a man called Brückner, started asking me questions. We really had a relaxed conversation. Then he got up and went towards the door. Being an obedient soldier, I flung myself forward to open it. And there was Hitler, standing right behind the door. This I will never forget. I felt cold, and then hot. I felt every emotion standing there opposite him.
Well, then that would include sexual, right?
What?
If he felt every emotion.
Probably.
All right, then the next one here, Misch describes seeing Hitler dead. And once again, the sexual...
Suddenly, I heard somebody shouting to Hitler's attendant, Linge, Linge, I think it's happened. They had heard a gunshot, but I hadn't. At that moment, Martin Bormann, Hitler's private secretary, ordered everyone to be silent.
Yeah.
Everyone began whispering. Then Bormann ordered Hitler's door to be opened. Then one of Hitler's aides opened the first door. It was Günscher or Linge. I don't know which one. Both were there. Then the second door was opened. I saw Hitler slumped with his head on the table. Eva Braun was lying on the sofa with her head towards him.
They were dead. And then somebody said...
Things are bad.
So
that was dead. Boy, how'd that guy see that?
I told you. He was the elevator... not the elevator. He probably was the elevator operator. He was the telephone operator in the bunker.
So he's like one of the last guys.
Yeah, he's one of the last guys. And so he split. He got out of the bunker, And he was captured by the Russians. They got a lot of them got out. If you see the movie Downfall, it's a very good movie. You know that one?
Yeah, you're talking about it. I'm going to go see it.
Well, I got it on DVD around here somewhere. Anyway, it's a very accurate retelling of what happened and what a lot of them got out. A lot of them formed groups and busted out. Martin Bormann got out and was killed by the Russians pretty soon after. And it's too bad because that scumbag should have been on trial at Nuremberg. Well, all of these guys should have been. This man got out, was captured by the Russians, and somebody was standing there, and he went, and they realized they had him. And
did they have, a horn?
Yeah, that's what they had, but a horn. When they captured a Nazi, you'd always know they had a Nazi because you'd hear, what are you, nuts? So anyway, that's what happened. Anyway, thanks very much. We got a split. I'll tell the story later on. World famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Rick Johnson, and our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. Great job tonight, guys. Thank you all. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. philhendryshow.com. Oh, yeah.
Phil Hendry.
That's nuts.